What is up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Sound Money Podcast. I am here with John Chen, a fellow flipper of websites, and he is a fellow entrepreneur and former, I guess you could say, what would we say, manager of Blush and Bar for a little while there before you flipped it. How you doing, John?
Hey, what's up, Steve? What's going on? I'm excited to be on the show.
Yeah. So everybody, as a quick background, John and I were on a panel at the Flippa conference in Los Angeles in 2019. It was a lot of fun. That's where we first connected. We've stayed in touch, you know, shot some ideas back and forth. But for everybody that is listening that's new to flipping websites, buying, investing in websites and whatnot, I think John is a fantastic example of how to buy something when it's relatively small, scale it with a little amount of resources and learning as you go, and then flipping it. So John, if you could just give us kind of a high level of your background when you were, you know, at a hedge fund and when you got into this, and just kind of tell us a little bit about that transition.
Yeah, sure. So this probably started 2.5, maybe 3 years ago. I was working at a hedge fund and I was super happy with where I was working. I thought I was going to be the next Warren Buffett. And one day on a Friday afternoon, my boss called me in and was like, hey, this is the worst part about this job, but we're going to have to let you go. And from that, I decided I never wanted to work for anyone else ever again. And, you know, I always had an entrepreneurial spirit, but a lot of times I didn't have really any ideas or any money. So I went on Flippa, was looking to acquire a tiny business and try to grow it. And I bought an e-commerce jewelry company. At the time, it was doing, I'd say, $1,000 a month in revenue. And in the course of 2 years, scaled it to over $1 million in revenue per year, and sold it on Flippa too. I bought it on Flippa, sold it on Flippa. So that's why Flippa had me on the panel. And yeah, so now I'm up to a bunch of other projects and acquiring a couple other businesses and looking at other opportunities.
That's awesome. So Blush and Bar was what it was called. Mm-hmm. And it is such a phenomenal case for technology. And one of the things that I've talked about on the pod in the past is hyper lean businesses, where effectively using technology, you can have 10 arms working for you. And this is a prime example of the fact that you could single-handedly go in, buy an e-commerce company and scale it to million. I think that is something that a lot of people don't realize is doable. So what, for someone that's just starting out, that's listening, that's interested in business and starting up, what was that like for when you were learning, okay, I now am an e-commerce entrepreneur, step one, day one, what were the first kind of things that you wanted to set up and learn?
Yeah, so the first 3 to 6 months was a lot of flailing around. You know, I tried different ways to grow the business. I tried, you know, everything. I tried basically like trying to DM people on Instagram and trying to give them 40% off. And anyone who would like any post of ours, I would, you know, directly DM them. Hey, I saw you liked our post. You want 40% off? You know, something crazy like that. I was about to go into the New York City subways and start selling jewelry like that. So I think but that's important in the first 3 to 6 months when you don't have a lot of resources, when you don't have a lot of knowledge specifically. I think the way to make up for it is a lot of action and a lot of, not crazy action where you just kind of bang your head up against the wall, but action and then reflection on, did this work? Is this a possible scalable thing in the future? So I tried all types of different things, SEO, what else, like email marketing, we did it all. So we eventually cracked Facebook ads and paid social, which is what really allowed us to grow. But for everyone, I think it's just going to be a different channel, whatever product or service you're selling.
Yeah. And I think that one of the things that that John and I really connected with was a lot of you guys that are listening. I know that I worked with a company called Native, and we were using Facebook ads heavily to really grow rapidly. And that company exited to Procter & Gamble for $100 million in 2017. And I saw the pure power that, like you said, John, those, once you crack that code for Facebook ads, the sky is the limit, essentially. It's like, you put $1 in, make $3 or $4. And it's like this exponential growth once you get that that down. So that's interesting that you were testing a bunch of things out. Everybody that I talk to always says, like, you know, test, build, learn, figure out what works for the brand. Some things won't work for certain brands. And I think influencer marketing and DMing people is a great first step to figure out what works for people, because it's pretty cost effective, wouldn't you say, on Instagram when you were first trying that out?
Yeah, I think dollar for dollar, it was, especially when we were first starting out, the best return on our money. The problem is, it's a lot of work and it's not really that scalable. So if you want to work with a couple of influencers, you'll DM them, you know, you give them product or something and they give you both content and a little bit of reach for whatever you're selling. And I remember the first influencer we worked with, we paid her like $40 to post for us, and she drove sales of like 250. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. But, you know, you can't really scale that heavily without having a large team. And, you know, not every influencer is going to have that type of ability. So, you have to reach out to them, and you have to send them the product, and they have to say, oh, I like this, or this is fit for my audience. So it might take a couple weeks to do it. But with that said, I think it's really important to have your first, channel of sales be somewhat organic. That way you don't fool yourself into thinking that you can just apply paid traffic to it.
That's a perfect segue into team. So you mentioned team there, and a lot of people, when they hear these types of numbers, I always tell people, you know, don't get intimidated by the numbers. And I think that you touched on team, and from your experience, coming into this and learning all of these different aspects, testing things, what was it like on the team side of things? Did you have, obviously you didn't have a very big team, as you mentioned before, but who were you working with? Were they freelancers from a marketplace? And what did you do to kind of break down those barriers of, did you need a developer? Where did you find a developer? Did you need a designer for creatives and things like that? I think that's a very mysterious aspect to
the team. For team, I'll give you an example. I live in New York, and I used to go to these startup events where, mm-hmm. you know, there these direct-to-consumer startups would kind of like speak on their experience, and there'd be a couple like Scentbird or a couple of other, even jewelry companies like Orate or like Majuri or something like that. And they're just kind of on a different model, if that makes sense. So a lot of them would have the same amount of revenue that I had, but they would have teams that were, you know, 10, 20 people, because they're venture funded and their whole thing is pitching some sort of dream where they're like, I'm going to be the next Tiffany's or something like that. So for us, we never had more than 2 full-time employees, I would say, and most of the other people were on a need to work basis. So we would find them from a lot of different places, whether it be Upwork or Fiverr or a couple of other sites. We got contractors. We only really had 1 full-time customer service employee, and then sometimes we would supplement with more. But at our height, we probably had maybe 2 or 3 full-time employees, and then the rest were just, on an hourly basis.
Yeah, see, that is that right there is a prime example of hyper lean. Like, you're getting up to $1 million in revenue with 2 full-time employees at the peak. Is 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, that is just out of reach. Like, the idea of that is just insane to people, to think about how quickly you can scale up to something like that with only two people. And I think that that is just a testament to where we're at with, you know, the 1099 workforce, places like Fiverr, Upwork, all of these places that I've mentioned in the past that I think are very underutilized right now in terms of where people can find help for ventures like this. So that kind of segues us into where you're at now. So you bought this business, you scaled it, you kind of took a little bit of a breather, and you know, after you exited the business, where are you at now, and what are you working on now, John?
Yeah, so I recently bought another tiny e-commerce business in the wedding space. So looking to do the same. And while I was actually looking at other businesses to acquire, you know, I was looking at businesses of all different sizes. And for me, I was always comfortable kind of limiting the downside. So I was always taught at the hedge fund, you know, look down before you look up. So you would always, I always thought of, you know, what's my downside? Even if you have enough money to do a bigger acquisition, for me, I just felt comfortable acquiring a small business. So this business is probably the same size as the other one that I first acquired, and looking to grow that using a similar skill set and a little bit more experience this time.
That's an awesome saying, man. Like, look down before you look up. I'm going to use that. That's a fantastic saying. Look down before you look up. So protect your downside first. So when you looked at this business, what were the first things that you look for? Like the kind of tried and true John Chen diligence when he's looking through, what are you looking for?
Yeah, sure. So I can give a little insight into my thought process both for this and my first acquisition. So I always felt more comfortable buying products that were sold a little bit based on emotion rather than kind of a logical process. So let's say you're like selling staplers, you know, you're probably just going to pick the best stapler, the highest rated stapler, or the cheapest stapler on Amazon. So I always felt comfortable buying businesses that were a little bit more emotional, whether it's a wedding space or, you know, sell to primarily women, just because a lot of the products are bought on an emotional decision-making process. So that was like one check mark that I wanted fulfilled. Another is a level of organic traffic. So this speaks to the look down before you look up. If you have traffic that's organic, it's I think more downside protection in that you know that it's not going to drop off a huge amount. With paid traffic, you know, because the prices of ads are going up and down, a lot of times, you know, small changes in the price of ads will turn your profitability, will flip the entire profitability of the business. So unless you really know what you're doing with stuff like that, I would shy away from that because, you know, look down before you look up. So, you know, if you have something organic, it's also not going to grow super fast probably because a lot of work to kind of get that SEO going, but it's an investment for that. But if you ever had the choice of organic or paid, I would go for the organic just to, you know, protect your downside a little bit.
Yep, 100% agree. The organic traffic, I'm usually only looking at things that are 60% or above. In terms of the organic consistent traffic, because that protects that downside in the event that if all else fails, you know, at least you're getting 60% traffic from search engines and whatnot. And I think that right. The emotionally driven, that's a really good tactic and strategy. And it is interesting talking to a lot of different investors on products and the businesses they look at, and I personally have steered a little bit clear of e-commerce just because of that paid ads seem to be a lot of the businesses out there right now, like drop shipping type businesses where it's just essentially a big funnel, like they're just operating on multiple funnels to their site. They're almost like just a team of advertisers running up against these high perceived value products. And I think the emotional part is a good hook for the businesses. And I love the approach to going after women, because they control the internet essentially with buying power. I think that they are definitely the customer to reach. So you have this business, you're excited, you're in the driver's seat. What are the first couple of things that you've done with this new business that you learned from the last one that you've set up and you're excited to really double down on?
Yeah, the biggest thing is, I think for any business, even our old business, 80% of your sales are going to come from 20% of your products or SKUs. So I think this is a big mistake that I think a lot of first-time e-commerce entrepreneurs especially do, is they have one product that's kind of working or has a little bit of a product market, and then they start to diversify away from, okay, we sold earrings that were working, so now we're going to sell necklaces. And that is, I've learned the hard way, just not the right way to do things, or not the easiest or most effective way to kind of grow. You know, if they like earrings, what you should sell them is more earrings, and more earrings that kind of look like the first ear. So we, for example, in our old business, we sold a lot of rings, right? And we sold these like delicate looking rings, and no matter what we tried to cross sell or upsell or all that, what they just wanted was more rings that kind of look like first best-selling rings. So you know, a lot of entrepreneurs, and even with this business that I recently bought, they have hundreds of SKUs, and literally one or two are responsible for most of the sales. So my biggest focus coming in is saying, hey, let me kind of put a lot of these other ones aside and focus on this one product. Let me create a couple of landing pages, create a couple different ways to appeal to the product, and maybe advertise it in a couple of channels, but really focus in on that core product that's really working. I think when you to get to like a million in sales, you really only need one product and one channel, that you're really good at. It's only after a million do you start to need to diversify and start figure out some other channels. But if you're trying to get to a million in sales, which is maybe I think what a lot of your listeners are trying to do, you only need one channel, whether it's FBA, whether it's Google search, or whether it's Pinterest or Facebook or Snapchat. You really only want to get you to that. And I think it's a distraction to try to focus on a bunch of different things, especially when you have something that has a little bit of steam.
Yeah, the spray and pray approach that a lot of people will take of sending out, you know, 10 different products that their Amazon widget has told them to sell.
Yeah.
Yep. I think that's a pretty common thing nowadays. Like a lot of paralysis by analysis, people going all over the place trying to sell a bunch of different things, and instead of just laser focusing on one thing and doing it really well. Yeah, I think that's some excellent advice. Cool. So last little segment here is for everybody out there that's just trying to get started in an e-commerce business, what is one or two tips that you would give yourself when you were first starting out? What would you tell someone, you know, if they're at a job that they, you know, for example, at the hedge fund that you were at, you know, what would you wish that you would have heard?
Yeah, I wish, so in the beginning, so the story with the jewelry business is when we first bought it, some of the products were kind of selling, but they weren't selling at a rate where we could really grow and scale the business. So what I actually had to do was find new products or design different products. And it was kind of like starting from scratch, because it wasn't like I bought the business and all I had to do was apply paid advertising. Some parts, but it was only the testing and failing that led me to realize, hey, I need to try something else. So know that if you're looking to start a venture, know that the first, I would say, 3 to 5 things you're going to try are just completely not going to work. So don't get too invested in it. So for us, for example, when we first started out, we sold jewelry that was at a low price point. So maybe like $20 was the price point. And, you know, we would make a little bit of money with Facebook ads. This is when Facebook ads were a little bit cheaper, we could get a cheap cost per acquisition and all that. I don't think that's going to happen now. The cost of how much ads are, you can't really get a CPA of $20-$30 for any product. But I knew that. And so I spent all of my time focusing on creating a different product with a different value proposition and different appeal to a different type of customer. So I think a lot of times when you first get started, it seems like you don't want to kind of look at, you know, the ultimate product or the product market fit, and you just think, okay, what is the thing that I need to do to make it grow? And it seems like a very linear type logical equation. It's like, if I do this, then I get that. But a lot of times it's the product or itself or the value proposition or the actual offer of what you're selling that actually propels to growth. So that's a very big, important part of the equation. And it's what I wish I focused even more on when I first started. Mm-hmm.
Good tips. Good tips. Cool, John. Well, where can people find you on social media?
Yeah, sure. So you guys can find me at my holding company called Amplify Capital. I'm looking at larger businesses and smaller businesses, mostly digital focused. So you can reach me through email at john@amplifycapital.us, or just find me at Amplify Capital, and I'd be happy to share my story and someone else just starting.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for sitting down today, John, and telling your story. I know that it's such a good story and a good example of how people can definitely stick with it, and they can really follow their e-commerce dreams out there. So thanks so much for sitting down, man.
Yeah, my pleasure.